loading in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It's the cure for the common restaurant. Expert interviews, tools, and tips to get you the restaurant you know it can be. Now, here is your host, Donald Burns, the Restaurant Coach.
And welcome to another episode of the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It is the cure for the common restaurant. You know, my mission is simple: to give you more ways to turn your restaurant into the kick-ass establishment that you know it can be. Now, many listeners have asked about how to grow their brand from one location to many. And the truth is, that requires a kind of a big change and shift in your mindset as the owner. Now, to help you get closer to making that shift, I asked my friend and serial restaurateur, Kelly Jones, to come on the show and share some of his insights from working with some of the biggest brands in the country. Now, here's the thing. Kelly's even going to share a couple of his favorite interview questions, which, I mean, they are real gold to getting better talent on your team. And if you know, selection is a key element that all high-performing restaurants say is a factor to their success. So let's dive into the interview. All right. Allow me to introduce today's guest. I am honored to have back on the show the myth, the legend, Kelly Jones from Kelly Jones Hospitality. Welcome back, Kelly.
Great to be here, Donald.
How are you?
You know, I'm pretty darn good. I get to do what I do every day.
That's true. Where are you at today in the world?
I am actually at my home base in Las Vegas, Nevada.
That's very nice. That's very nice. Yeah, because I think you travel more than I do, and I travel quite a bit.
I get on the road day after tomorrow for 10 days, so.
Oh, there you go. Yep, the life of a restaurateur, right?
That's what we do.
That's it, exactly. So, hey, listen, for people who maybe haven't, you know, caught the previous episode with you on there, why don't you give them a little refresh and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started?
Well, I got started a long, long time ago as a dishwasher and a busboy in a Greek diner in New Jersey. So I worked 4 years working myself up to a line cook, and the restaurant bug bit me and it never looked back. And that was over 40 years ago. So I've been blessed to work with some of the best in class in my career, from Pusser's Rum to China Grill Management, back when we were the third largest multi-unit concept operators in the country. I was vice president of restaurant operations for Kimpton Hotels for a few years, and then grew Steven Starr out of Philadelphia and opened up Budokan and Morimoto in New York City, and then a couple of other properties around the country for him, and then moved back to Las Vegas in 2007, and I've been on my own ever since. So right now I've got 16 properties that I oversee. I either own or I'm the management company for. Mm-hmm. Different states, and then I have a consultancy on the side.
Yep. So, you know, one of the concepts I really think is really cool is your new ramen concept. Could you talk about that one a little bit?
Yeah, well, about 4 years ago, we were approached by, three guys who very accomplished in their careers. One's an attorney in Tokyo, one's a finance guy in Thailand, and the other's chief vascular surgeon at Dartmouth. We've known each other since college, and so we thought, how cool would it have been if we had an authentic ramen shop when we were going to college? You know, the ultimate comfort food, noodle soup, and very affordable. Our check average between $17 and $18 per person. And so we developed Gaku Ramen, which translates to educated noodle, and figured we were going to put them in college towns across the country. So opened our first one over 3 years ago in Burlington, Vermont, near UVM. Proof of concept, we evolved it. Within the first year, we were mildly profitable. The second year, we were wildly profitable. So we just opened our second ramen shop in Boulder, Colorado, right next to Colorado University. And it's 3 months. It's kicking it, and we're already looking at number 3 and 4.
Ooh, where's number 3 and 4 going to be?
We're looking in Pittsburgh, Saratoga, New York, Ithaca, even here in Las Vegas. Any place where we could be close to a college. Yep. Even though that is certainly our shtick, our demographic is certainly local, you know, affordable. So I've done celebrity chefs over the years, you know, restaurants, white tablecloth restaurants. And it's funny because my growth vehicle right now is noodles and donuts.
No, isn't that funny? It's almost like you go full circle, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, how much does it cost to make a donut? How much does it cost to put out a bowl of ramen? And, you know, I've learned, you know, a while ago that the long-term growth strategy is through cover count, not check average. Mm-hmm. So the goal is that, you know, we keep the check average low, but we have people that are coming in 3-4 times a week versus, you know, once every couple of months for a special occasion.
Yeah, and for people, I think looking at, you know, getting into the industry, you know, you definitely don't want to, I don't think you want, especially in today's market, you don't want to get a huge place and have a huge overhead. I mean, like, you know, you said, you know, the ramen concept is great. And then you have a donut concept too, right?
Yeah, Dapper Donut, one at MGM Grand in Las Vegas and one at the Fulton Street subway station in New York City. And, you know, it's really cool because these will take off. And as you know, the most expensive cost in operating a restaurant is your occupancy costs and your labor costs.
Exactly.
Well, both of these concepts operate in a small footprint with a very limited number of staff.
Okay, I've been to your donut concept. I'm just telling you, there is nothing in the world like fresh hot donuts coming right out. I mean, it's amazing.
And you get to customize your flavors
too. Oh, I know. That's like the coolest thing is like you get to pick the different flavors and toppings. It's awesome. Yeah. I'm thinking about that donut concept. I have to go back to the gym now because I'm just thinking about it.
Well, they're mini donuts, right? So, you know, psychologically, you can eat a couple of them and still feel good about yourself.
Yeah, psychologically. But the problem is with those things is you can't stop with one or two. I mean, you need a lot. I mean, they're just so, they're addictive.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure what you put in there, but they're addictive.
Well, you know, our original thought was to call it crack donut, but we didn't think that would be a good idea.
Probably not good marketing. But they are like that. They are addictive like that. Yeah, every time I'm in Vegas, MGM, I stop by there. For sure. And I always say I'm just gonna get like one bag and then end up eating that bag and then turning right around getting another bag. So
yeah,
it's crazy. So hey, coming up, you are gonna be a featured speaker at the Restaurant Success Summit this November. And I'm so excited about that. What can attendees expect from your session on, you know, building a restaurant empire?
Well, I think, you know, speaking about the metrics, you know, one of the things that I've had to train myself over the years is never fall in love with the concept and never fall in love with the space. You know, if it doesn't pencil out, it's not worth it. So really talking about the metrics of how to do site selection, how to pick a concept, how to do some demographic research in the area you're going to, and really taking the guesswork out of what we do and really making it more of a scientific approach.
Awesome.
To being able to grow an empire. And then with me, you know, Gaku Ramen and Dapper Donut are the only two concepts that I have multiples of. All the other concepts that I operate are one-offs. So really, you know, how to manage multiple operations at the same time through technology, because certainly I can't be everywhere at the same time. There's often times I'm not at one of my properties for a month or two. So how do you manage multiple concepts by, you know, being a team of one. And, you know, I mean, when I was with Kimpton, I had 40 restaurants across the country. When I was with China Grill Management, we had 34 restaurants across the country. So, you know, people are like, how do you manage all that? I'm like, I have 16 properties. I still have a long bandwidth to go.
Right. Yeah, but it's a different mindset. And that's the biggest thing I think you're going to teach there is how to shift that mindset from going, you know, from one or two locations to how to basically change your thinking.
Well, the psychology is simple. You have one restaurant, you micromanage everything, you're part of every single detail, and
right.
Then as you grow, you have to hire really good people, you have to train them really, really well, and then at some point, you just got to let them be able to, you know, have an ownership mentality themselves and operate. So we're even going to talk about how I bonus my managers, and I bonus my managers the same way I am compensated through bottom line net operating income.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's a lot of things people don't think about is how do we, you know, keep, you know, you go out of your way to attract and retain and, you know, and get these top talent, but how do you keep them there?
Yeah. And, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, there's an old HR saying, you know, slow to hire, fast to fire. You know, where most restaurateurs do the exact opposite. They're fast to hire and they hire the wrong person and haven't done their due diligence. And they're slow to fire, which can really hurt, you know, staff morale when the rest of the team knows this person's no good and you're keeping them around. So, you know, and the other thing is, you know, and here's the most amazing thing to me, Donald, you know, after all these years in the business, and we are in such a small industry where, you know, there's about a half a degree of separation. I mean, know when you and I first met a couple of years ago, you know, within 5 minutes, we knew 20 of the same people.
Oh, yeah.
That people don't call references. And
that's true. You know,
one of the things that I absolutely do. And in fact, when I'm sitting in an interview and I'll see, you know, that he's worked somewhere where I know the owner, I'll say, so what is, you know, Joe, the owner, going to tell me when I call them about you? And you can learn a lot about somebody by just their reaction to that question.
Exactly. Yeah, I had somebody one time put on their resume they knew Mario Batali, and I knew Mario, and so I was like, what's going to say when I call him? They're like, well, you're going to call him? I'm going, yeah. He like freaked out.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just it. You know, resumes are often, as you know, fabricated and embellished. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really simple. I mean, you can tell a lot by just calling references and just verifying facts on the resume.
Exactly. So what is your take on joining a mastermind group?
Listen, I've always been very big on collaboration. Mm-hmm. And I believe none of us are as good as all of us. And as, you know, as well as I've been blessed to do through my career, I always know that, you know, I've got roadblocks and blind sides. And so joining a mastermind certainly gives me not only the ability to give back to fellow colleagues, but also to gain their knowledge as well.
Mm-hmm. It definitely is a real kind of synergy. I mean, I always think out of a mastermind group, you definitely get out what you put into it. So,
oh, no question. And I'm very humbled to be part of such a esteemed group of individuals.
Yeah, they're always fun. So over the years, who would you say has been kind of your biggest mentor over the years?
Without a doubt, Charles Tobias. Charles was the owner and is the owner of Pusser's Rum. Mm-hmm. I worked for him down in the U.S. and British Virgin Islands from 1990 to 1998, where I went down as an executive chef, and then he made me a general manager, and then my first multi-unit operation, where I became his corporate director of food and beverage and oversaw 12 operations. So wow. In 8 years, I went from chef all the way to corporate director of operations. And, you know, he was, you know, really interesting guy, you know, certainly his management style. He was a Marine fighter pilot in Vietnam, and, you know, his life story is just amazing. He was an orphan from Canada that emigrated to the U.S., ended up, you know, going to college, became a Marine fighter pilot in Vietnam, you know, got out, started a software company in the then unknown Silicon Valley in the late 60s, early 70s or early 70s. Sold it in 1975 for $300 million to IBM, and ended up buying a sailboat and sailing around the world by himself, twice circumnavigated the world. Wow. And ended up in Tortola and, you know, fell in love with the romantic notion of British Navy Pusser's Rum. You know, Pusser's mm-hmm. Rum was given out for 300 years aboard the British Navy ships. And in 1971, in the computer age, they couldn't have that kind of margin of error, and they stopped giving the rum. But, you know, for 300 years in the days of wooden ships and iron men, to make mm-hmm. life more bearable, they basically got their sailors drunk, and the purser distributed two tots of rum a day to each sailor, and they corrupted that to Pusser, hence the name Pusser's Rum.
Wow, that is such a cool story.
Yeah, it's just rich in history. And, you know, the rum's still around. There's still a bunch of restaurant and retail stores. I'm still an advisor. I always laugh and say I'm his unofficial consigliere for the last 20 years since I haven't worked with him, but, you know, I'll always remember him. He really, in 8 years, taught me so much about, you know, business and leadership.
You know, I just now put the dots together. So like last year, this last February, we were in Madrid speaking at Hospitality Innovation Planet. And I remember like they didn't really have a big, huge selection of liquors to choose from. And then you were like started making suggestions about rum. Now I know, how come you know so much about rum?
Yeah. Havana Club. You had Havana Club, yeah. Which was banned because it's a Cuban rum. Until recently, you can get it in the States now.
Yeah, that was awesome. That was a good time. And I'm looking forward to us going back. You know, Team USA is going back to Hospitality Innovation Planet in February 2022. So it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, it was so much fun. I am so looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. So recommend one restaurant that you would say is like the ultimate model of hospitality.
There's a restaurant here called Sage at Aria at mm-hmm. Here in Las Vegas. And you know, it's one of the, it is a fine dining restaurant. but it's not pretentious in any way. It's the kind of service that is so on point that you don't even know you're being served until after you've been served.
Oh, wow.
The food is unbelievable. Sean McClain is the chef owner of it. You know, anybody that ever comes to Las Vegas and they want a recommendation, I recommend Sage, just because the service is impeccable. The restaurant itself is absolutely gorgeous, and they execute on such a high level in their food and beverage programming.
Oh, very cool. And for people who want to check it out, I'll make sure in the show notes, I'll put a links there for it. So you can check it out.
Yeah. Just look at the menu and you'll be like, I got to go.
Oh, awesome. So, you know, everyone, one of the biggest things I hear everyone today is like, you know, talent, 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 hiring, hiring is such a challenge, such a challenge. What are you doing differently to attract talent to work at your restaurants?
First of all, you know, obviously you have to be competitive in your wage.
Mm-hmm.
But I also feel that, you know, I'm a little different still and a little bit old school where, you know, when I hire people, I give them goals with which to achieve and get better compensated as well. In other words, I'm not going to bring a cook in at the highest rate that we pay our cooks because they haven't proven themselves. And I'm right. A big fan of don't tell me how good you are, show me, and I won't tell you I love you, I'll show you. I'm going to pay people commensurate with their skills and their ability. I think, you know, one of the big things is, again, the interviewing process. So you're vetting people, being able to call and get real references, mm-hmm. not the references necessarily that, you know, they put on the resume that they've coached people on what, you know, to say about them. And then, you know, certainly the training program, you know, the more you expect from people, the more you have to train them. So you're setting mm-hmm. the expectations right away. You know, I always like to say it's easier to give birth than to resurrect because you know, I love having new people because they don't know any other way but the way you show them. And, you know, let's face it, you and I both know most restaurants, a trainee walks in, the manager that didn't hire them is working. It's like, yeah, I'm here to train as a server. And they look mm-hmm. around and go, follow him. And that's their training, following somebody for a couple of days.
That's it.
And, you know, I think that you have to set an expectation. It's got to be very high because, you know, when you interview somebody, they're also interviewing you. When you bring somebody in to train, they're also evaluating you and how well your restaurant operates and how well you have your systems together. And then, you know, certainly, you know, it's really important you treat people with dignity and respect and mm-hmm. lead by example because there's no other way to lead. You know, if you're going to expect your team to do something, you better be able to jump in there and do it yourself.
Yeah. One of the things I praise about your, you know, your Gaku Ramen concepts is, you know, when I follow you on social media, you're always putting up pictures of the team. You're always putting up pictures of people having a great time. You're always having that digital presence that, you know, we're a fun, cool, hip place to work.
Yeah. And the team loves it. They love being out there mm-hmm. in our advertisement and our social media. You know, and we also encourage our team because I always like to say, you know, congratulations, not only your server or cook or host or bartender, you're also part of our marketing team. Exactly. So you know, you putting our stuff out on your social media because everybody's got it because everybody has a vested interest in the restaurant being busy. Because if you're in the front of the house, if it's not busy, you don't make tips. And if you're in the back of the house, we got to cut labor. So everybody's vested in making sure that the restaurant's busy so everybody can make money.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's true. It is definitely a kind of a group marketing effort. So kind of going off track here, give me your favorite interview question.
My favorite interview question depends on the position. So the first interview question for servers and bartenders mm-hmm. is how much money do you want to make? And the only answer I want to hear is as much as I possibly can. I don't want to hear, well, you know, $100 a shift or $500 a shift or, you know, $20,000, you know, every 2 months because you're limiting yourself immediately. You know, so for anybody in sales, I want it to be as much as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. For cooks, I always ask them what's their favorite restaurant because it tells me a lot about their culinary prowess and what really drives and motivates them. And for management, it's more of a business question because everybody says, oh yeah, our food cost is 28% or our beverage cost is, you know, 25%. And so I said, so were you responsible for, you know, beverage cost or food cost? And, you know, yes, I was. And then I say very simply, how do you figure out a food cost? What's the formula to figure out a beer cost, a food cost, a champagne cost, a wine cost, a liquor cost? There's only one formula. And I will tell you, Donald, 9 out of 10 managers, general managers, executive chefs can't answer that. And it's really simple. It's inventory plus purchases minus inventory divided by sales.
Yep.
And that's how you get your cost of sales percentage. And it never changes. It hasn't changed in the 40 years I've been in the business. But it's really amazing because most people don't know the answer to that question.
That is the truth. That is those are great questions too, by the way.
So yeah, those are my go-to. That and of course, everybody gets what's more important while you're working than the guest that walks through the door of the restaurant. Only answer, nothing.
Nothing. Exactly. Nothing. So, you know, food halls are huge. And I know your company manages a couple of really awesome food halls. Let's talk about food halls. Do you think that they are kind of the business model of the future?
They're certainly a huge growth opportunity for my company, Hospitality Alliance, which is a management company where we operate food and beverage operations in about 5 hotels around the country. Mm-hmm. And we do food halls. I think the fine dining as we knew it 10 years ago is probably gone for a long time. You know, the white tablecloth, you know, $100 check average service. So I believe that, people want to eat differently. They want more variety. They want more value. Mm-hmm. Food halls are great because, 5 people can walk in and one person's going to go get beer. One person's going to go get sushi. One person's going to go get burger. Another person might get a sandwich. Maybe somebody else wants to just get coffee and a donut and they can all come together communally at a table. The check averages are traditionally pretty low. In our food halls, we have entertainment. We have DJs and bands. We do cooking demonstrations so that there's nothing going on. It's high energy, a lot of natural light. We have one that we operate in Fort Worth, Texas right now. We're building one, a huge one for AT&T at their corporate complex in Dallas, Texas. That'll open up next year. And we've got food halls under development in Napa, California, Glendale, Colorado, a couple here in Las Vegas, and another one up in Jersey City, and one in Charlotte, North Carolina. So I think they are big. We've consulted on a lot of them. We've kind of become the food hall guys because we've done so many of them in our time. Our ultimate goal is, we consult on them, but our ultimate goal is that we actually become the operator.
Right.
They're really high energy and much more highly curated than a food court, where a food court would typically be an inline bunch of stores that are national chains. Mm-hmm. The success of the food hall is that you're able to go into a market, find out who does the best burger, the best sushi, the best pizza, the best of, artisanal guys that really care about their product. And, going out and getting them into the food hall, it's win-win for the operator because, again, the cost of entry is, maybe $50,000 versus, a couple of million for a brick and mortar building. They come in, they're just bringing in their, their supplies, their specialty cooking equipment and their staff and their inventory. So, the cost of entry is less. They're paying their rent only on their production square footage that's actually selling the product. And, they're able to expand their brand for half of the, a sliver of the cost of doing an actual brick and mortar restaurant. And for the developers that we worked with, it's win-win because if we have 10 tenants or 16 or 25 tenants, now you have 10, 16 or 25 different marketing arms because now each stall is promoting your food hall as well.
Exactly. Yeah, I really love the food hall concept. I think it's a great way, like you said, it's a great way for especially new businesses to get off the ground. I know there's quite a few food halls around that actually act almost like incubators,
Yeah. I mean, it was first, it was the food truck.
Right.
But food trucks are, a lot of maintenance. A food hall isn't. You're just, worrying about the equipment behind your stall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a place up in Denver. I think it's called Zeppelin Hall. And what they do is, you basically apply and you have to fill out like a business plan and make a pitch. And it's like an incubator model. So you get a place, but you can only stay for a year. And once you get your, business to a certain model, then they basically kick you out and tell you,
Well, and listen, and that makes sense because, your cost of entry is nothing,
Right.
If you're going into a, brick and mortar and you're going to put, $500, $1 million into capital improving, you know, a landlord space, you know, you mm-hmm. want a long lease, you want 5-10 years. But with the food halls, you know, your cost of entry is so much less that, you know, we do the same thing. Our initial leases are only 3 years. And then we also have a good guy clause. If you don't want to be there, then we don't want you there. Because if you're not happy, you know, you have other tenants around you. We don't want them to be unhappy because right. you're not happy. So our good guy clause is simply, you know, you operate and pay rent till your last day. And then you take all your stuff out. And, you know, so if the sushi guy leaves on a Friday, we got another sushi guy in there on a Monday.
What's your go-to, which food hall of yours do you like the best?
Probably Crockett Row. So Crockett Row in Fort Worth, Texas, we opened mm-hmm. it up about 10 months ago. We were on the cover of Fort Worth magazine this past month, June. And we got best new restaurant in Fort Worth.
Ooh, wow. Cool.
You know, we have 14 restaurants within one restaurant.
And what's your go-to restaurant in there? What's the one you always got to go to?
I don't think I even could tell you because I go to a different one every single time.
Oh, do you?
I think Knife Burger, John Teaser's burger concept. I mean, I'm not a burger guy. You know, I think a burger's a burger, but he's got a badass burger.
Oh, does he? John's he's an incredible chef. He draws a lot of controversy because he's very opinionated, which is awesome. I think, you know.
Yeah, he is incredibly opinionated, but so entertaining.
Yeah, he's super entertaining. You know, and the thing about John, I always say, is that he can bag his shit up. You know what I mean? So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, he wears like a badge of honor that he's the most hated chef in Dallas.
Yeah, he does, actually. He loves that comment. So what do you say is the biggest mistake you made when you first started running multiple locations?
Not hiring the right people.
Mm-hmm.
Not having the right technology by which to monitor all of those operations. You know, I live and die by a software called Avero. You know, before my feet even hit the ground in the morning, I've already mm-hmm. read through all my manager's logs. I can tell you what our check average was, our average spend. I can tell you what our, you know, covers were for the various meal periods, and then also all the manager's notes of what they've written, you know, from the day before. So that way, you know, I can keep my finger on the pulse of what's going on in all the restaurants. And then, you know, the other thing is, you know, letting go. I've learned that I can't micromanage everything as a multi-unit operator, and I've got to sit back and trust my people, and they're going to make mistakes, but, you know, I use every mistake as a learning and coaching opportunity so they don't make it again.
There you go. So how important to you is your peer group to success?
Critical. You know, I always tell my team and all the properties that you can work here every day without me. I can't survive one day without you.
Right.
And I don't care if it's, you know, from the general manager to the busboy dishwasher, you know, everybody's an integral part of our operation, and they all need to know that, you know, they're appreciated every shift, every day.
Very cool. So what are some new projects you have kind of brewing on the future?
Oh, we've got a lot of stuff brewing. you know, my development whiteboard is probably got about 20 different things on it. So we're looking at, you know, doing all the food and beverage in a hotel in La Jolla. We're bidding on a food and beverage operation in a hotel up in Lake Tahoe. We've got three different proposals out to do food halls here in Las Vegas. One in Colorado, one in Napa. We've got a bunch of consulting work I'm doing. In fact, I'm heading to Philadelphia on Wednesday and then up to New York on Monday to do a consulting job for a new concept up there that's wanting to expand. So they want me to kind of give them a kind of report on their proof of concept.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff coming down the pike.
Awesome. Yeah, you're always busy, that's for sure. So give me the name of one guest that you would recommend to be on the show, on my show, on my podcast.
God, that's a hard one too, because, you know, you and I come in contact with so many colorful characters.
I know.
I think honestly, Jeffrey Chatero, who is the principal behind China Grill, probably one of the coolest, best bosses I've ever worked with. First of all, he's unbelievably intelligent. Super creative, and he grew an empire. I mean, China Grill Management, we were the third largest multi-unit concept operators in the country behind Let Us Entertain You and Levy Restaurants. They were the only two that were bigger than we were back in the mid-2000s. And now I think most of his stuff is over in the Middle East, but right. He's just, this is like his third career too. I mean, he owned Braniff Airlines. He was a professor at Wharton. I mean, the guy's really an incredible guy and just a lot of fun. He was fun to work for.
All right. You might have to send me an introduction to him. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you again in November at the Restaurant Success Summit. If you haven't gotten your tickets, make sure to save your spot because it's going to be, we're keeping the group really small. So that way, not only do you get some great education and value, but you're also going to get some one-on-one time with the speakers I have. So if there's like specific questions you have for like Kelly, he's going to be there, have lunch with him, he'll be around for dinner. He'll be at the poolside having, cocktails for our social hour, hit him up. He'll be more happy to answer some questions for you. And I'm going to have links in the post, in the show notes for anyone interested in checking out Kelly's, his projects, his company, or if you're just looking, to reach out to him to have, his team, maybe help you run your operations better. And in closing, all I want to say is, getting the restaurant life you want is not a far-fetched dream. In fact, there's power in taking action and there's power in joining a mastermind group and networking with other high achievers. You do rise to the level of your peers. Sometimes you just need to kind of jump in and you got to just move up to that next level. And with that, I'm going to say thanks, Kelly. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Donald. Always a pleasure seeing you and talking.
Always my pleasure. And we'll catch you on the next time.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Coach Podcast with Donald Burns. Tune in next time as we serve up more ways to maximize your potential. Visit our website at www.therestaurantcoach.com or download episodes at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify.